Now that Deep Throat's identity is in the open, the biggest unnamed leak left in Washington is whoever outed CIA operative Valerie Plame to reporters. I refresh your memory. Plame is the wife of former Ambassador Joseph Wilson. Her name showed up in Robert Novak's column after her husband publicly criticized some of the Bush administration's evidence for going to war in Iraq. In the ensuing investigation, and it is a federal crime to disclose the identity of an undercover intelligence officer, two reporters, Matthew Cooper of Time magazine, Judith Miller of the New York Times, have defied a grand jury. They kept their sources secret, so today they lost an appeal to the Supreme Court. Matthew Felling is a media director for the Center for Media and Public Affairs. He's here in Studio 3A. Matthew, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So what does this case mean for a reporter's ability to protect their sources?
Yeah, actually, it is journalists' ethics, unwritten rules in the crosshairs right now. We had a reporter up in Providence earlier this year get sentenced to house arrest because he was protecting the name of a source who had given him an amazing story about the mayor up in Providence. And I think it actually serves the discussion to go a little bit further backwards. In the 2003 State of the Union address, there were those famous 16 words uttered by President Bush that, quote, the British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa. That made a huge splash back then when we were still in the ramp-up process. And on July 6th of that same year, former Ambassador Wilson wrote in a New York Times op-ed that it sounds like the Bush administration is twisting intelligence to exaggerate the Iraqi threat. If that sounds a little bit like the Downing Street memo, it's not just accidental. I mean, what Wilson wrote in the New York Times that day was pretty much the Downing Street memo before the Downing Street memo. And then just 8 days after Wilson wrote that, we had Robert Novak identifying his wife as a covert agent in Africa. And according to a lot of people around that time, it was a huge splash in journalistic circles because it sounded like a little bit of retribution. And what these reporters by just biting their tongues, they are protecting people despite the intent of what they were offering. If they were offering it for malice or if they were offering it for information, the whistleblower ethic knows no boundaries between those two.
And it's sort of an interesting case because, as you say, the White House did have to acknowledge that the information the president gave us was incorrect. It was wrong, and they acknowledged that. So then, yeah, it looks like, wow, 8 days later, this guy's wife is outed as a CIA agent. Hey, that could be retribution. Okay, so that's the context for the story. But the implication is this information came from the White House's retribution. So in a sense, you're protecting the White House source, which would have been the damning evidence against the White House.
Exactly.
If you give it up.
Yeah, no, it's like the question about drug possession. What is the intent? It's the question of giving out information off the record. What is the intent? The journalistic ethos does not draw a line. Well,
right.
The angels were speaking on this one and the devils were speaking on the other one. But another criticism I have is that it's extremely damning of the news media at large, because the day that this came out, I remember reading it, and on the front page of the newspaper that day was Kobe Bryant apologizing to his wife and to America for the travails of his time in Colorado. And then also, before this story could get any momentum, this story, the Novak piece was on a Saturday, before it could get any sort of legs, we found Uday and Qusay in Iraq. And that took over, I think everybody remembers, that was the story for the better part of the rest of July, for the better part of a month. Were they shot up? How dare we do these things to these bodies? That was the story. And then Novak's scandal didn't really come up until September of that year, because there was a constant drumbeat from liberal writers like Paul Krugman at the New York Times and David Korn at The Nation, just to make sure that Americans wanted, just to make sure that this stayed enough on the radar screen that Robert Novak wasn't going to get off scot-free. And there's an interesting backstory, because Robert Novak has not said anything publicly about this, and David Ignatius of the Washington Times says it might not be about Judith Miller. It might not be about Matthew Cooper at these publications, but the prosecutor might be looking inside the White House for some perjury because they had everybody. They had President George W. Bush involved in the case. And if somebody says that they did not give this information to Cooper and Miller, but Miller and Cooper go against that, this, as Dick Ignatius said, is a lot like Moby Dick. It's not just a story about a fish.
And Novak has not been charged with contempt. So as far as we don't know if he's told anybody who his source is.
But it's only a couple dots away from figuring out that maybe there is a certain special type of arrangement between Mr. Novak and the prosecuting team.
What, there are 49 states now that have laws that protect reporters. What effect does this decision have in those 49 states?
What this does, the decision to uphold the 1972 decision, is I think it puts a lot of pressure on politicians. There's actually H.R. 581 and Senate 340, there's two different separate pieces of legislation asking for a federal shield law in order to have journalists be able to promise their sources anonymity. Because if you think about it, we're just 2 short years away from when the Time Magazine Person of the Year was the whistleblower. I mean, we have Colleen Rowley at the CIA. We have the person inside Enron and WorldCom. We need whistleblowers. And as much as the news media took a beating lately, Mark Felt and Deep Throat reminded us that we need to be able to rely on anonymous sources, people who are close to power, and we need to be able to promise them anonymity by virtue of a big story. And I think that this will definitely help the congressmen who are trying to push a federal shield law through.
How does this? How have the courts been when these cases have come before them before? Is there a sort of a clear line of thinking about protecting the reporter's right to shield their sources?
Well, you know, honestly, it's a case-by-case basis, and it falls into different jurisdictions. Apparently, here we have an appeal that they were appealing all the way up to the Supreme Court, where the judge said that they had to give up their source. Otherwise, they were going to be placed – they were going to be held in contempt of the court. Different justices see it all across the board, but I think we're getting to a boiling point where we need a federal shield law in order to make sure that there is one uniform code. Because if you're a reporter in one state, you don't know if you're being held to the Wyoming law or if you're being held to the District of Columbia law, because they're written all very differently. And especially with the global news environment that we have, I can be reading the San Francisco Chronicle at my desk in Washington, D.C. We need it to be uniform across the board.
Matt, thanks very much.
Take care.
Matthew Felling is the media director at the Center for Media and Public Affairs, and he joined us here in Studio 3A.